away.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Maria, and welcome everyone. I'm Dr. Diana Burgess, and I am a core investigator at the VA Minneapolis Healthcare System and director of the CLERI Complementary and Integrative Health Evaluation Center, or CHEC. And I'm also joined by Dr. Stephanie Taylor, who is the executive director of CHEC. As part of CHEC, we run this monthly complementary and integrative health cyber seminar series, which always has a great lineup of terrific speakers. Now, I'm very pleased to introduce you to Dr. Matt Thayer and Dr. Nikki Monk. Matt Thayer is an Army veteran, general internist, and VA pain researcher. He's the director of the VA HSR Center for Health Information and Communication, professor of medicine in the Division of General Internal Medicine and Geriatrics at the Indiana University School of Medicine, and the research scientist at Regan Street Institute. Dr. Bear's principal research focus has been on chronic pain management in the primary care setting. His research has also focused on chronic pain and psychological comorbidity, such as depression, anxiety, PTSD, and sleep problems, and finding ways to better manage this comorbidity. Nikki Monk, PhD, LMT, is chair and associate professor of health sciences in Indiana University School of Health and Human Sciences in Indianapolis, and is clinically trained in therapeutic massage. After completing her doctorate in gerontology from the University of Kentucky in 2011, Nikki developed a robust research career focusing on real-world massage therapy for chronic pain and associated factors, including emotional well-being, trigger point self-care, and accessibility challenges to massage. And in addition to our speakers, we're always really pleased to have a member of the Office of Patient-Centered Care and Cultural Transformation, or OPCC-NCT, who's our operational partner in CHEC, and who attends the monthly CIH cyber seminars to give a reflection on what we just heard and provide some comments about how this fits in with OPCC-NCT policy and practice, and what the VA is doing in the space. And today, we're very fortunate to have Dr. Janet Clark, who is Senior Physician Lead for the National VA Program Office in OPCC-NCT. So now I'm going to turn it over to Drs. Bear and Monk, whose talk is entitled Tomcat Study, Trial Outcomes for Massage, Care Ally Assisted versus Therapist Treated.
Thank you, Diana, Stephanie, and Maria. Thank you all. Thank you for attending. Happy Thursday, everyone. Dr. Nikki Monk and I are going to tag team this presentation on our Tomcat study. Nikki was truly my co-PI in this effort, and it's been a labor of love, and we're happy to share some of our results with you today. It was funded by VA Health Services Research and Development, a merit review. For my disclosures, I've researched funding from VA Health Systems Research, Cooperative Studies, Clinical Sciences Research and Development, and National Endowment for the Arts. I'm affiliated with the VA Center for Health Information and Communication, Indiana University School of Medicine, and Regan Street Institute. I have no conflicts relevant to this presentation. For Nikki, no research funding currently. She's affiliated with IU Medicine, School of Medicine, and Rehabilitation Sciences. She's ARCCIM fellow. She's also affiliated with the Massage Therapy Foundation Board of Trustees. She is not a federal or VA employee and has no conflicts of interest relevant to this presentation. Here's our outline objectives for today. I will start with some background, context, and significance of our Tomcat study. We had an original design, and for various reasons, we modified our design. So I'll talk about our new methodology, We had several sort of disruptions during the course of this trial, which required a design modification, which we will talk about. Nikki will talk about our CareAlli assisted massage and some of the results related to that portion of the trial. And then I'll talk about the therapist delivered therapeutic massage and results related to that. And then we'll wrap up with some clinical implications and discussions from our point of view. We look forward to some points from Dr. Clark and questions from the audience. So for background significance and some context, you know, why are we studying neck pain? Well, it's a very common chronic condition in the world, in the U.S., and among our veterans. In at least one study, 2/3 of veterans had prevalent chronic neck pain. Depending on the duration of the epidemiologic study, prevalence will vary, but suffice it to say that it's a very common condition. Veterans that you know, have a diagnosis of cervical stenosis have, you know, almost all of them have some neck pain. It is very disabling. It's globally, it's the fourth leading cause of disability worldwide, and in the U.S., it decreases function, negatively impacts quality of life, and affects psychological conditions and emotional well-being. Not only is it common, but it's costly. You know, there's a lot of healthcare use related to chronic neck pain that raises healthcare costs and indirect costs related to employment. Systematic reviews have showed that the treatment with medications are, you know, relatively limited benefit, and some of the non-pharmacologic treatments, such as physical therapy, have modest benefits for chronic neck pain. So that, you know, motivated us that we need more effective non-pharmacologic approaches for chronic neck pain. And this is also in the context where there's really high demand for complementary and integrative health approaches, especially among veterans. Some of the earlier studies that really inspired our work were done by Karen Sherman, Daniel Churkin, and the group at Kaiser Permanente in Seattle, University of Washington. They did some of the sort of core foundational work in this area, and two trials are sort of highlighted from that group here. One looking at a randomized trial therapeutic massage for chronic neck pain, and then the second one on the right was looking more a longer term, and it was you know, framed as a dosing trial of massage therapy over 12 and 26 weeks. So there has been evidence that massage therapy is effective for musculoskeletal pain, particularly chronic neck pain. However, you know, there are some challenges for massage therapy. While it's perceived as you know, effective, and there's some evidence of effectiveness, there are significant barriers. There's access challenges for massage therapists. There's costs involved. Many the treatment or massage therapy has been out of pocket costs. It has traditionally not been covered by insurances or not as widely available as other complementary integrative health treatments. And we have to balance this where, you know, our patients, our veterans want massage therapy, demand it. And so that's the context of our study. Our study aims, we had three aims. The first aim was to compare the effects of two massage interventions. So again, a CareAlli massage and a therapist-treated massage versus our control on our primary outcome of pain-related disability. Our second aim was to look at the effects of these interventions versus control on secondary outcomes. And these included things like pain severity, health-related quality of life, depression, anxiety, and stress. We also had a qualitative aim that we wanted to look at implementation potential of our interventions, facilitators, barriers, evaluate some of the treatment adherence issues and intervention costs. Moving into sort of our design, our original design and methodology. So this was our original Tomcat design. We had an ambitious goal to randomize 468 veterans with a chronic neck pain, randomized to one of three study arms: a care ally arm, a therapist treated arm, and then a usual care waitlist control arm. This was, a 5-year study, three arm. Nikki will talk more about the interventions, but briefly, our care assist, we had a 3.5-hour group training workshop and recommended the 30-minute routine, three treatments per week for 12 weeks. And our therapist treated, it was a twice weekly 1-hour massage at our VA facility for 12 weeks. In terms of participants, our eligibility, we wanted the veterans to be engaged in care. They had chronic neck pain, so that was pain for more than 6 months. They had a neck pain and neck pain disability of a moderate severity, so they had an NDI, neck disability index score of 10 or greater. We ruled out, or we excluded those that had complex neck, pending surgery for neck pain, whiplash injury, cancer in the neck region. So we or medical contraindications, admitted for myocardial infarction or heart failure in the previous 6 months. We recruited through different means. Our main approach was, systematic mailings, recruitment letters, and then follow up on those mailings. We also utilize word of mouth and in clinic recruitment. In the upper right, we have our assessment timeline. So we had a baseline assessments at 1 month, 3 months, and 6 months. To reiterate, our primary outcome was the neck pain and disability index, or NDI, and our secondary measures. I just included a couple here: BPI, that looked at pain severity. And then we looked at emotional well-being, mental health conditions. Just provide a little bit about the NDI. It's a 10-item measure that looks at disability related to neck pain, pain severity, how neck pain interferes with work, recreation, reading, sleep, a variety of things. In terms of what is a good meaningful score, a greater than 5-point change is viewed as minimally clinically meaningful change. And then for our BPI measure, we also looked at a greater than 30% change is sort of a metric that's used in the pain literature. I think I'm going to pass it on to Dr. Monk, or okay.
Great, yeah. So thank you guys so much for having us. I'm really excited to be here and to share the work that Dr. Baer and I did together. So I think before I get into the intervention specifics, just a quick note of when this study launched and was funded, we based our interventions on the prior literature, as Dr. Baer mentioned, Dr. Sherman work and Cherkin's work, and looking at trying to address those accessibility barriers, and cost is a major barrier for folks to be able to receive massage therapy. And I mention this because now massage therapy is included in veterans' health benefits package, whereas at the time of the study launch, it was not. And one of our areas of focus was wanting to provide the benefits of massage therapy without having to have access to a massage clinician. And so that's where the Care Ally assisted intervention came from, was to try and address that. And some of the work that I have done prior is looking at massage self-care. And this other option of having a Care Ally assisted approach, where we recruited dyads, so people who had a partner who was interested and able to learn how to do the massage. And that's how we developed this. So For the CAM intervention, the intervention consisted of that 3 to 3.5 hour training. They came in as a group, so we would identify certain times during the month, and those individuals would come and have the training session. And during that training session, we had several support materials and learning materials. We had a PowerPoint that I followed as I was going through the basis for the intervention and then learning about the routine. And there was also practice opportunities. So once we learned all the different components of the routine, then they did a practice in real time, and I was able to monitor, assist, and help with those. And in addition to that, we created a DVD that had a video outline and instruction materials that people could go back and review. But most importantly, that DVD had a real-time treatment happening that the allies would be able to watch and perform at the same time that they were doing the care. So I have some images of that that'll help that become a little more clear. The dose, once we had the training, that was essentially the participants' kickoff time period. So we would collect baseline, get individuals scheduled for their training session with their dyad. And then once they had that training session, that essentially launched them into their kickoff time for the intervention. And then after that, we asked them to do 3 care ally assisted massages per week for the 12-week period, so for that 3 months. And then we asked them to monitor how much they were doing the full routine or just portions of it or the self-care components of it over that time and return those logs to us. So this is a breakdown of what that routine consisted of. And we have it, this is following a typical massage therapy session and then addressing, and it was also aligned with the Sherman protocol that they were using in their research studies that was therapist treated. So we created a session that mimicked that included some warming up of tissue, some stretching range of motion. You can see how much time was allocated to each one of those items. And we would also break it down because there would be some activities that the care ally did by themselves, others that the veteran would do. And so we had the layout of what was expected during each one of these segments all laid out. This is just the menu from the DVD. So you could see where we had all the different sections of the DVD support. That top one that's highlighted is the routine demonstration. And what that consisted of, I was so proud of how this turned out because when this was actually playing, you saw the real-time video of the demo occurring. And it had over here, oh, let me see if I can get my arrow pointer, my laser pointer. So over here, we had what component of the routine they were in and how much and when they were supposed to be done by that section. So these had how long it was going to take. And then this was a running time countdown clock. So you could see where from starting at the 30 minutes and then it would count down. And then it had let folks know what was going to be happening next. So they could have that PowerPoint playing, or excuse me, that video playing in the background on their television or what have you. And be able to be doing the treatment in real time. So this is just another example of these are something. So what we saw earlier was the care ally performing the massage. But this is an example of this was an activity that both the care ally and the veteran can do at the same time. And this was some of that really deep specific work that could be done in the back of the neck. And so as you can see, we've got an outline of all the different things that are going to happen in this 4 minute period, and then when that was going to end. So this was just nearing the end of the intervention. Now for the therapist treated massage arm, we had massage therapists that we hired that had at least 2 years of professional experience. They had to be licensed and accredited or certified in Indiana. And they also had to go through an interview period and do a demo of treatment, making sure that the work that they were doing would be appropriate. But we did have a protocol that was set up to address particular regions and intents for the treatment. And our dosing for this was folks were going to come in twice a week for 1 hour sessions. So up to 24 sessions is what they would receive for 12 weeks. There's the descriptor of the therapists, and these were delivered within a private room 18. Within the Rodebush VA. And we had a timed PowerPoint that would help for the fidelity of the treatment. So the massage therapist would start a timed PowerPoint that would outline all the different pieces in the timeline of what they were going to be working on. But here is the breakdown of this was how we had the protocol set up. So rather than talking about this many strokes on this area of the body, that doesn't account for clinical decision-making and being able to address the needs of the patient and the veteran at that time and their particular experience of neck pain. And so what we did was we set up a warm-up session, then we would have some specific neck work, and then we would have an amount of time to be able to work on compensatory areas, so places that may be compensating for the neck pain, and then also being able to integrate the specific work into the whole of the body, going back to some more specific neck pain, and then integration and closure again. And what this essentially is doing is allowing for a typical massage session to occur as it would in the real world, and it's also accounting for the amount of change that could be expected when somebody's receiving massage over a period of time. You're not necessarily going to have to do the same amount of specific work as the pain experience starts changing. So that's why we have these different ranges. And the PowerPoint, this is an example of the slide. We would have what was happening right then, how long they'd been in the session, how much time was left in the session. And this was a PowerPoint that would play and change slides timed every 30 seconds. And it would keep up with how, when there was 15 seconds left, 5 seconds left, et cetera. All right. So Matt, I can send this back to you, or I can do this general study timeline pieces. Is that okay? All right. So this is just an outline of that study time period. And as we noted, we did have to have some modifications. And in November 2019, we had to modify the whole design of the study to go to two arms. We'll talk about that here in just a moment. And then, of course, we also had the COVID-related interruptions. And this is what happened just after that. But prior to COVID interruptions, after we had been recruiting and launched for 2 years, this is just the flow diagram of how folks were coming in and how they were being randomized. So we had nice, robust randomization, even randomization across all of the arms. But what we were having challenges with in the CAM arm is that kickoff period. So while we had 102 veterans randomized to that Care Ally assisted massage arm, we were not getting a robust return for folks coming and actually doing the training. And so by the time we were 2 years in, you can see the differences of being able to initiate the intervention time period. And we had to have hard conversations and make some decisions around how we were going to realistically complete the study. And so we did come to the decision that we would remove the Care Ally assisted arm, do analysis, some secondary analysis that I'll present here in just a moment, and then continue forward with the just the therapist treated arm and versus control. And once we removed that arm, we continued to have really great, robust recruitment. And then COVID happened and we got all shut down about 4 months later, 4 months after that. So quickly, we have we did go ahead and do assessment on the Care Ally results that we had. And this is when we see this waitlist control with the sub-zero, that's just letting us know that it was the people who were randomized to the waitlist control up until that point of modification. And then we removed all the TTM arm, the therapist applied massage. And when we look at our participants, they were evenly distributed amongst the arms. They were mostly male, mostly white, but there were no differences between characteristics between the different arms at baseline or in their outcomes. One of the things to note, though, we did do analysis on those at baseline in the CAM arm who did and did not come to the training. And we did see that those who did not attend training and were withdrawn were more likely to be younger, and then were also more likely to be employed, which may suggest that the care ally approach isn't as appropriate for those who may be working full time or who have other life needs with family and things like that. So what we're looking at here is just the breakdown of our NDI, that neck pain with disability. We've got our CAM arm over here and our weightless control arm here. So you can see where our numbers are coming through and what their mean scores were. All of these were in that moderate pain with disability range at baseline. And then in this column, we see the within group changes at 1 month, 3 months, and 6 months in the CAM arm. We see the changes here for the weightless control at 1 month, 3 months, and 6 months. This is within group. And then of interest here is the comparison between the CAM arm and the weightless control arm. And the key takeaways from this is that at that 3 month time point and that 6 month time point, that for those who did attend the training had a significant difference in their mean NDI score. Our secondary outcome of interest was neck pain severity, and we saw, similar to our NDI scores, we saw similar declines and at all of the time points for our care ally assisted participants, no changes of significance or of note in the weightless control. And when we compared the two groups against each other, we had significant difference benefit for the care ally arm at 3 months and also at 6 months, pointing to that for those who did attend, it was a beneficial treatment, but it was getting folks to attend that was the important piece. I love pictures, and I always think that that's a really great way to convey information. And what we have here is just the charting between the care ally group and the weightless control group, and the proportion of those groups who experienced clinical meaningful change. So as Dr. Baer noted before, greater than a 5-point change for the neck disability index is considered significantly beneficial. And then for the pain severity, a 30% improvement and much higher proportions in the care ally achieved those clinically meaningful changes in benefit. And of note, we do see that the proportion is going down just a smidge at 6 months, perhaps indicating that there's not as much retention from the neck pain with disability index or neck pain with disability aspect, but that pain severity did seem to retain its benefit. So I'm going to go ahead and as I was going, I was talking about some of those implications. So at this time, I'll go ahead and turn control back over to you, Matt, and you'll be able to progress to the therapist applied results.
Yeah, thank you, Nikki. That was nicely done. So let's move into the therapist treated massage versus our control arm, some of our results. So as Nikki had alluded to, we needed to pivot. We needed to make a major protocol modification. We had concluded, while we were very excited about the care ally, and as Nikki showed, there seemed to be definitely some signal and some benefits from it, There was some retention challenges. There are some engagement challenges that we decided to pivot. And so we changed our design to a two-arm study. It was stratified randomization based on male, female, and our primary outcome, or excuse me, our primary aim was to compare therapist-treated massage versus control on the same outcomes: pain-related disability, pain severity, health-related quality of life, depression, anxiety, stress. In terms of this aspect, we had 290 veterans with chronic neck pain, evenly randomized to the two arms, 145 in each arm, mean age of 56. You see the racial breakdown, about 70% white, 24% black. You see our ethnicity in terms of Hispanic ethnicity. We had 14.5% females. Two-thirds were partnered, about two-fifths were employed, and they had significant medical comorbidity with three conditions, self-reported conditions at least. So these are our primary outcome, our neck NDI, our neck pain and disability. Starting in the upper right-hand corner, we see the numbers from baseline 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, as well as their mean and standard deviation on the neck disability index measure. You know, just for pattern recognition, you see that the NDI goes down in the TTM arm, which signifies improvement. Does not go down. In fact, it goes up in the control arm. Looking at the panel at the bottom of the slide here, we have within group changes within the TTM arm. In the middle, you have change within weightless control. So you see that there's differences. There's a reduction in disability or improvement in the TTM, no change or minimal change in the weightless. In the far right, we see within group change here, and that's at the 1 month, 3 month, and our primary time point was the post-intervention, so at the 3 month or after the 12 weeks. You can see that it was statistically significant. It did not meet the between group, 5-point difference. So does that reach clinically significant? It was, again, statistically significant. They did improve. We did have a fair amount of attrition, as you can see, and we faced a lot of a lot of challenges related to our staffing and COVID and other reasons for that, and just engagement. This just highlights what I was just saying there in terms of, I think, focusing mainly on the between group difference in the NDI between the TTM and the control, 2-point improvement, 3-point improvement, and it looks like it, the disability starts to sort of creep back up at the 6 months. So whether effects are sort of sustained is questionable. This is just a picture of the table of the data that I just showed there. Again, you see the baseline at the far left, starting at a moderate NDI level, and then sort of generally going, the red circles are the weightless control arm. See that there's plateaued or maybe slightly increasing. You see that the disability decreases at the 1 month in our TTM arm, more significantly at the 3 month, and starts to climb a bit, although still different from the at the 6 month time frame. This is similar. Our primary secondary outcome was neck pain severity. I'll highlight that we again looked at within group for both the TTM and the weightless control, focused mainly in the far right where we're looking at between group differences in pain severity. A significant between group difference on the pain severity is a 1-point difference. So we did reach that metric. So it not only statistically significant but clinically significant between group difference in pain severity. And this just highlights what I was saying there. Again, far right is what I was mainly talking about. You see at 1 month, there was a 0.8 decrement in pain severity, 1.3 point. Again, these are between group differences, and then 0.8 at the 6 month. This shows over time, what that looks like, the data I just presented. So pain severity does not really improve. In fact, it's just kind of plateaus in the weightless control, the red circles. In the greenish circles, you see the TTM, drop in or improvement in pain severity.
Clinical meaningfulness, if you'd like me to take from here.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure. So those primary analysis pieces were looking at group means. So everybody who was measured and looking, combining all of their scores and getting the average scores. And that's really important from a statistical change standpoint. But one of the things that we really love about the outcome measures that we use, the NDI and the pain severity, is that they do have those that ability to see the clinical meaningfulness at that individual level. And so now we're going to shift the way that we're talking about these results and look at the individuals who did have clinical meaningful change. And so we see the changes in mean, but what we see here again is the mean, but we have some additional interpretation of what those numbers mean at an individual standpoint. So again, the NDI is a scale of 0 to 50, with a 0 to 4 being no disability with neck pain, a 5 to a 14 is mild, 15 to 24 is moderate. And you can see on average, both groups had moderate disability with their neck pain at the start. And then we can see those decreases again. These are from the means. So now if we look at the proportion of individuals who did experience clinical meaningful benefit, we have those numbers here. So while we know that on the whole, our folks in the TTM arm, the treatment arm, did see improvement in this outcome, we can see the amount of individuals who at 1 month, 3 months, and 6 months, and the percentage of those individuals who did reach that clinical meaningful change. And we can see that when we look at the two groups between the massage arm and the control arm, that at 3 months, we did have a greater number of individuals who did receive that clinical meaningful benefit, and that the overall model was significant. And then this is the same information from the neck pain severity standpoint. And so again, to be able to get that, yes, they did experience clinical meaningful change, that was the 30% improvement from baseline. And so the BPI is a 0 to 10 scale. So usually it's considered, you know, a 1 point change is pretty pronounced. But a 30%, we can see the amount of folks who experienced that. Over 40% at our primary outcome of those who were in the massage arm were receiving clinical meaningful benefit in their pain severity, which just from an individual standpoint is absolutely meaningful for sure. And we can see that at all of the time points, there was a greater proportion of individuals in the treatment arm that was having clinically meaningful benefit in their pain severity. So I want to talk a little bit more about this, because I think that getting an understanding of like what that looks like is kind of helpful and important. So we're going to just look at the Neck Pain with Disability Index. And this is just an example, as Matt alluded to earlier, of how this scale works. And it has 10 different sections. And for each of the sections, it gives folks an option to indicate how they're experiencing their neck pain in relation to these meaningful categories in their life. So pain intensity, driving, sitting, standing, sleeping, those sorts of pieces. So things that really make a difference. And you can see how this would be a score of 0. I have no pain at the moment. Then it, as it progressively goes up, it's scored 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. So that's how those pieces are broken down. So what we did was we put together some individual composites of folks who were actually in the study and who did receive clinically meaningful change, so that you guys can contextualize the impact that this treatment had on these individuals' lives. So for our first person was a 64-year-old male, and he started off at baseline with a severe neck pain with disability with a score of 25. And what this looked like was that he describes his pain as very severe. He could not lift or carry any weights at all. He could not work at all because of his neck pain. He could drive, but he would have moderate neck pain, and he could do no recreation activities at all due to his neck pain. So at the 3-month mark, this individual received a 12-point change that meant a 48% improvement of his pain. And this is what that looked like for him. So instead of his pain being very severe, it went down to moderate. From not being able to lift or carry any weights to being able to carry heavy objects if they were conveniently positioned, to not being able to do any work at all, to not doing usual work. So there was still some disability there and limitation, but we see that change there. From a mildly disturbed sleep to no trouble sleeping, driving with moderate pain to just slight pain, to not doing any recreation, to being able to enjoy all recreations with just a little bit of pain. So you can see the impact on how oftentimes with these chronic conditions, they're not going to go completely away and forever, but having that relief is where that clinical meaningfulness starts showing up. So we have another example of this. This one will go a little bit quicker. I put it all in the same place since we know what we're looking at. So this is a situation where we had a 54-year-old female, and she started off as well with moderate pain. Actually, I'm so sorry. I'm going to back up just once back to that other one. And just to note that with that 12-point improvement, our first example started at severe pain and went down to mild pain in their scoring. So for our female example, she had a 43% improvement, so not quite as pronounced, went from moderate to mild. And this is just the example of how that manifested for her. So being able to lift only light objects if conveniently placed, to being able to lift heavy objects, to not being able to drive, to being able to drive with just slight pain. Sleep being greatly disturbed to just mildly disturbed, and to not being able to do hardly any recreational activities, to being able to engage in all recreational activities without neck pain, which I know for my mother would be awesome to be able to play with grandkids and all of those sorts of things. So Matt, if you'd like to go ahead and step in with some of the results and takeaways.
Sure. Thank you, Nikki. Yeah. So we saw that, you know, massage was very well received by our participants, well tolerated in terms of side effects, comparable in terms of clinical benefits from massage compared to other treatments, reinforces some of those prior findings we discussed, especially from Sherman's group. So there can be, sample differences. Veterans compared to non-veterans generally have worse baseline measures, may require higher dosing, longer treatments than non-veterans. As Nikki mentioned, thankfully, massage therapy is part of the veteran health benefits. And I think our next steps are, how can we sustain treatment effects? Is that requiring booster? Are different tapering approaches to massage therapy. It was truly a team approach to this study, and have many people to thank that you see listed here, especially to Dr. Monk, who is my partner in this, co-PI. So thank you all for being part of this, and I see Dr. Burgess on, or Dr. Clark, if she wants some comments. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. That was so interesting. And yes, we're going to turn it over to Dr. Clark, and everybody put questions in the Q&A box.
Yeah, thank you, Diana. And thank you so much, Matt and Nikki. This was really, really interesting. Very interesting to consider the care ally aspects, as well as the formal provision of massage with a trained massage therapist. And so one of the things that was really exciting to me was just to see the results that you had over, for example, a 6-month course, because one of the questions that we have, and one of the things that I think is a very sort of nuts and bolts challenge in VA facilities as we're trying to figure out how to support veterans in receiving massage care is this question of dosing. And so what is the right frequency, for example, over what period of time? And one of the questions that we have, of course, is what does it look like to have veterans be re-referred for care on some form of longitudinal basis? And I'm going to give you both sides of a balance scale right now, because I'll say that we actually know that massage therapy is a safe, effective, and actually relatively low cost conservative intervention for chronic pain. So that's on one side. On the other side, because bringing forward some of these complementary and integrative health approaches into VA is relatively new. There isn't a lot of clinician comfort and ease around considering, for example, whether or not a veteran should be re-referred. And there isn't a lot of ease in just the provision of care, because we haven't had yet, we have more than 60 massage therapists in VA, but we have about 140 VA facilities, and that's a lot of veterans. So just one massage therapist in a facility is probably not going to be able to meet the demand. And so we have a lot of care going into the community, and that's actually something that's a challenge to adjudicate over time. And so when we get information about questions of dosing, it's really very helpful to us. You also brought up some really good points that I can't help but just sort of bring back into the room. And that's this idea of what other kind of care is happening. And so when we think about the concurrence of care, and so I'll just identify that when a patient has really significant chronic pain in any place, right, complex chronic pain, one treatment modality alone is very unlikely to be a panacea, the end all be all, to go from, horrific pain to completely resolved. Really, we have the work as clinicians of identifying what is the recipe for this individual patient that's going to support their healing and recovery. And so how massage fits into that, and how clinicians learn to utilize CIH approaches such as massage as part of a treatment plan, because there may be appropriate medication, there may be times that PT may need to come in, and the veteran's ability to self-care and self-manage their condition is also very important. And so I think that this really brings to mind how beautifully massage therapy can fit into a multimodal approach or recipe, right, for any individual veteran's pain care. And so now the challenge that we have in VA now is to really help clinicians learn and support clinicians to understand how to best utilize massage therapy in their treatment planning for chronic pain, such as chronic neck pain. So really exciting to see your work. Thank you so much.
Yes, super interesting. And we're starting to get some questions in the chat. And this was something I was thinking about. Were there any additional training or handouts for the care support partner to complete after the study was over to continue care post-study?
Yes. So was the question specific to the care allies alone?
Yes, or, okay. I think so. Yep.
Yes. So they also were given a massage at the end, which was nice. So they've been, providing all this massage, but all of those materials went home, and that self-care piece was not just for the veteran, but the care ally was also getting that as well. Learned how to do some self stretches on the neck and other self massage type care for sure. And then there was support as well. So we would do check-in calls with the ally to see if they had any questions. And there, I actually had a couple of care allies reach back out to me because they were having some challenges either filling time or they had some questions around how they were experiencing giving the work, and jumped on a couple of Zoom calls and had conversation, walked through and worked through some things. So there was that support that they had. I was referred to as the mob boss because of massage oversight board. And as the one who provided the instruction, they would reach out to me and I was able to do additional support for some of those folks.
That is very cool. And to build on this, I believe that there was an implementation aim in there. And I was wondering if you did get more formal feedback, either qualitative or quantitative, from the care support partner or allies.
Not as much as we had liked, would have liked. So there were efforts to do some interviews, and we had the qualitative study. And if I'm not mistaken, and Matt, if you have the numbers different, I think we were only able to get three care allies as part of those interviews before that arm was closed down. But we did do some before and after the training session of their confidence and expectations around that. So we do have that data from the care allies. It hasn't been analyzed yet.
Yeah, well, there was some pilot data that actually showed some benefits among the care allies for delivering massage. There's some benefits. So we based on that, we did do some, as Nikki just said, qualitative, not much, but some quantitative measures as well among the care allies.
What types of benefits? Just curious.
Yeah, just feeling like they're serving. So there's some that you're serving, you actually boost a mood. Like I'm helping someone out. The context that I've seen it was in, cancer related pain, and you're helping your loved one or your partner with cancer to help relieve their pain. And like, you're taking control and helping out. And so that actually boosts your mood and alleviates some stress to some extent.
What I want to point out too in our discussion slide on that arm, one of the things that we didn't see the same kind of uptake in the care ally arm, which and most of the time as we were collecting information as to why people were withdrawing from the study and not coming to the training, it was, either it was scheduling challenges or my ally isn't interested or not able to come and to do that. So it was that component. And so we weren't So wondering why that sort of drive from the helpfulness standpoint didn't convey in this veteran. It was the ones that Matt was referring to were in veteran populations, and those were in situations of cancer, and I want to also say in emotional and mental well-being and reconnecting after returning from deployment. I think those were the populations. And so wondering if there's something about the chronic pain population that there might be a difference there in the dynamic between care ally and veteran. That's pure speculation, but wondering if that might be part of it, that it's the chronic pain aspect of it, perhaps is why that didn't convey.
So, we have another question. For the VAs that do not have massage available, do you have any advocacy recommendations to support this modality? Oh, and I think she means the ally modality for treatment planning for veterans. Or
Yeah.
maybe she meant the other kind, I'm not sure.
Well, we could certainly address that, I think, from both directions. From the care ally standpoint, finding those dyads that have high self-efficacy, that have that motivation, that drive of wanting to do these things together, because we see that those folks who did attend, for the most part, had benefit from that. But we could also see where those partnerings were really good and solid, and those folks who were really
Right.
motivated working together. That was very clear, even in the trainings. And so identifying that sort of snapshot of folks to approach of, hey, you know, there is this potential method. Do you have, you know, somebody who would be interested in doing this with you? And then from the, what was the base of the question again for the therapist applied application?
I couldn't discern which one, but it's really advocacy recommendations to support probably either modality for treatment planning for veterans, because as Janet pointed out, you know, we don't have sufficient numbers of massage therapists in the VA, like Janet talked about, the number we have employed versus the number of facilities, although there is the care of the community piece.
Right. Well, I'd love to approach that also to note on Dr. Clark's aspects around the being able to re-recommend for additional treatment, because I think that's one of the pieces. So as we saw in our data and in other data, is that, you know, there's a you have the massage, you have the benefits, and some of those benefits last over time, but there tends to be a decrement of benefit over time. And I think this is really hitting at the nature of chronic pain management and the need for it to be managed versus, in many instances, it's not going to be cured, whether it's because of an injury, that there's physiological and structural changes and deviations, or they're doing activities that will continue to aggravate. And so the goal of being able to maintain benefit, which is why we're looking at hopefully being able to explore a tapered approach. So in most studies, it's that here's all the treatments and then we're going to withdraw it and see what happens. And anecdotally, we received a lot of feedback from the veterans as their time was getting closer to the end of their treatments, really starting to get very stressed and very anxious, because they knew that it was this thing that had been helping them and they didn't know if they were going to be able to continue accessing it after the study was over, and because it was the only thing that had helped them thus far. And so being able to figure out what would be an ideal dose, does it have to continue to be twice weekly? No, probably not. But figuring out, is it starting off twice a week, and then when is it the best time to go to once a week, then maybe twice a month, then maybe once a month, once a quarter? In real world practice, that's how I would work with my patients who would come to me. And over, we would have a certain amount of series that we would have conversation back and forth to know, okay, if we go 3 weeks, we know that it starts creeping back up and can't manage. But we know that once we hit that 2 week mark, you know, that works. But the thing is that there's not a consistent recipe across all different individuals and all different conditions and situations. So being able to figure out a process that has some flexibility so that those individual aspects can be met would be ideal.
Yeah, Janet, in the last minute, what do you think about this?
Well, yeah, so I really appreciate this, because, you know, first of all, we see that kind of attenuation in benefit over time with other approaches as well.
Definitely.
And so I think you hit the nail on the head when you said, like, this is chronic pain, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that's helpful, I think, in terms of our, like, managing our expectations about any particular approach to care, managing veteran expectations about an approach to care, is to always sort of be looking forward and taking an opportunity, for example, for an improvement in function to serve as a boost to self-care and self-management. And so if somebody is able to do recreational activities, what does that mean? What does that look like? How do we prevent boom and bust kind of activities, right? And how do we employ support for improved self-management so that really that healing and recovery process continues to grow? And this idea of a taper is something we were actually just talking about this morning, because we're putting together some information for clinicians to support them sort of mitigating some of the care of referring to community care, mostly for massage, but also for acupuncture. And this is a topic of, you know, what would a taper look like? it's a little challenging for us with community care because we actually really can't tell that community care provider how what their provision of care should look like. So, and we don't have the opportunity to confer with them very easily. So, but we can within VA, within in-house care. And so I think that can be our focus. And it's, you know, it's really exciting for us as we're learning and growing, bringing this forward into our healthcare system.
That's so awesome. Thanks so much, everyone. And I'm going to turn it back over to Maria to close us out.
Thank you very much for taking the time to prepare and present for today's cyber seminar. And for the audience, thank you everyone for joining us for today's HSR cyber seminar. When I close the meeting, you'll be prompted with the survey form. Please take a few minutes to fill that out. We really do count and appreciate your feedback. Happy holidays, everybody. We'll see you in January.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Awesome study. Thank you.
Thanks.